This is an interview with Alicia Schneider, who served with the Air National Guard during the Iraq War. This interview is being conducted at the Department of Veteran Affairs at 30 West Mifflin, Madison, Wisconsin, on October 26th of 2011. The interviewer is Rachel Winkler. So, to start off, tell me just a little bit about yourself, like your background, where you're from.
Well, my name is Alicia Schneider, and I'm originally from Wanakee, Wisconsin, so very close. I went to high school there and everything. I went to my undergrad at UW-Milwaukee, and I got my BA in history. I'm currently going to Madison to get my MA in anthropological studies, and you can tell me about that type of thing.
maybe, like, what your family life was like when you were growing up?
Pretty typical suburb, Wanakee. You did all the sports, I did 3 sports a year, of course, kept busy. did a lot of outdoor type stuff. My dad was also in the military, so it was something I knew and experienced. We had to travel a lot. He was in the reserves, so we only had to travel maybe like once a year, but it was still, he was higher ranking, so we had to do fun things like go to Germany and Virginia almost every year, so it was a good challenge.
Was he Air Force Reserve like you were?
He was originally Air Force for 4 years when he was like 17, and then he became Army Reserves after he went and got his degree and everything like that.
Were they surprised at all when you decided to join?
No. every time we went somewhere, we stayed on military bases, so it was definitely a part of my life. And my older sister is 31, and she joined before me. So it was kind of just a succession of children. And my little sister actually tried too, but her eyesight was bad, so she didn't get to join. So it was pretty much coming. It was just, when were we going to talk about it?
Did you enlist out of high school, or did you go to college first?
I enlisted, my last month of high school.
Okay. All right, so they're kind of expecting it. What about, like, the rest of your extended family? Were they surprised by it, or did you get any, like, grandmas being like, oh, you shouldn't do that?
No. Definitely a huge part of my life. My grandma actually is from Italy and met her husband, who was a German GI, while she lived there. So got pregnant with my father and came back, so that was obvious. And my other grandma, my grandpa was in the Navy as well, so, and then my uncle, and everyone kind of was like, okay.
So you just have such a military, that's great. So, when you first started, where'd you go to, like, boot camp and stuff like that?
Went to San Antonio, Texas, at Lackland Air Force Base.
How was it?
It was okay. Yeah, I always tell people who are starting basic, it's going to be something you remember, but it's going to be something you almost want to remember, because it binds you together with everybody that you meet. The military is definitely something where you can be anywhere in the world, but if you meet someone in the military, you have this common experience, so you'll already be friends. It doesn't have to take a while.
Were you at boot camp with men and women, or was it separated?
It's men and women. You'd have what you call brother flights and sister flights, so you'd be in the same building, but you'd be in separate bays, as they say. So separate dorm rooms.
Alright. So then, did you do the actual training together?
Yes, you would do, they try, every time you came down, the Air Force has flights instead of pigeons or whatever the Army has. So you would get into a flight, and you get into your brother-sister flight, would join a lot together, and you'd work out together, eat together, go to classes together, pretty much everything but sleep together.
Was there any competition between the two, or discrimination or anything like that?
Definitely competition. And the TIs kind of pushed it, too, because, we're girls. So. But the girl flight did win in the end and got all the awards, and the boy flight continued to get in trouble.
So there wasn't, like, any, we're better than you because we're men kind of thing?
No. Not really.
That's good.
Yeah.
So after boot camp, did you go to, what is it in the Air Force, A school or
MOS? Technical school.
Your technical school.
Yeah, tech school. Yep, that was, I actually had this thing called split training. And I came in right as it ended, so I was kind of grandfathered in, which was nice for me because that way I could go to basic in the summer. Then I started my first year of college, and then I came back in the summer of my sophomore year of college for tech school, which is a little weird because they have pipelining where you go straight from basic to tech school and then to your base. So I had experienced what it's like to be in the normal guard world, and then I came back to active duty tech school with everyone who comes out of basic scared and still in that hardcore regimen, and so it was a little weird for me to come back, and I was sort of lax when I shouldn't have been lax.
So you were fresh out of high school and you did this?
Mm-hmm.
So you're 18?
17.
17, wow. What year were you born?
1987.
So, great. So, what service unit did you get into?
I'm in the 115th Fighter Wing, and I'm part of the 176th Fighter Squadron.
Okay. Do you have any stories from getting into it? Like, anything weird that happened, or funny, or...
No, I'm probably pretty textbook when it comes to training, besides the split training, that was weird.
Yeah.
Because I got yelled at a couple times for that type of thing, but...
How long was your basic training?
It was only 6 weeks.
Okay. How long were you at your tech school?
I was what we call a Pop-Tart, so I was 6 weeks, too. It was just in and out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Did you have any instructors that stood out as being particularly harsh or nice or anything?
Well, my basic TI was, it was his first time with a girl flight, and he basically, he wanted to be tough, but he definitely had that, he learned that women treat a little bit differently. You can yell at us, but whatever, you know, we're different, but if you give us that kind of, like, father over daughter thing where you make him feel sad or maybe a little disappointed, we'll react, and then we'll change our ways. So he kind of, instead of being super mean, would be like, oh, I'm really disappointed that I had to hear about this today, and that would get us all upset, and then we'd have work so much harder the next time, because he made him sad.
It's tricky. So, is there any, like, specific instances of that happening? Like, the first time it happened, were you guys, like, kind of blown away by it, or?
Well, we kind of acted like we ran the place. You know, girls kind of made their own little hierarchy form and rule each other by themselves instead of, I guess, guys would normally do it. But, well, he always wanted us to be the perfect, like, there's different awards you can get, like athletic awards and dorm flight and all this type of stuff. And he always wanted us to have the perfect dorm. So we'd always, he'd be like, oh, someone came in today while you guys were working out and they saw how horrible your beds are made, and we'd be all depressed. And we got caught and he knows about it, like we were going to hide it from our dad or something like that.
That's really cool. What made you decide to join the Air Force instead of any of the other branches?
Well, my dad did say that I was only allowed to join the Air Force, but, like, that was going to stop me. it was basically the best fit for me. I always thought I wanted to be a fighter pilot, so I figured I would join the Air Force. It was just after I started going to school that I realized I didn't want to really be a fighter pilot. I didn't want to take 2 years away from school to go live somewhere else and just focus on planes. I liked my 1 week in a month. I liked the 2 weeks because it allowed me to have both my civilian life and my military life, which I liked a lot. So, and the Air Guard was right next door, basically, at Truax Field, so it was perfect.
That's pretty awesome. So, after your tech school, where'd you get assigned?
Well, that's the good part of the Guard. I got to choose, so I just came right back to Madison. And that way, too, is nice. Like, if I wanted to move for my civilian job, you can always join another Guard base somewhere else.
That's pretty cool. What did you do when you were on base?
I do aircrew flight equipment, which is basically just inspect pilot's gear, and since we have fighter jets, it'd be helmets and G-suits and harnesses, and then they also joined us together, so now we work on parachutes and things like that.
So how does that work if you find something wrong with it? Did you actually have to do it, or did you delegate that to somebody else?
That would be what I would do. I'd fix it, and even as a supervisor, you would do that work too. Like, you go through phases. You have basically, like, a medieval time, you're a journeyman, and then you go to apprentice, journeyman, supervisor, those type of steps. So even as a supervisor, you work on the gear and you fix it yourself, but then you can also oversee the younger enlisted airmen and help them out and things like that.
So when you first got to your first base, what was your rank?
I was an A1C, an airman first class. It is an E3. E3. It's basically in the Guard, you get ranked differently than you would on active duty, and... Like, they always make fun of us, you tie your shoe and you get a stripe. That's the joke about the Air National Guard. But because you graduate from high school, you get automatically get 2 stripes. Instead of if you just went into active duty, you would get what you call slick sleeves. So you'd have nothing.
Okay. What's your rank now?
I'm a staff sergeant.
How long did it take you to get there?
6 years.
All right. Have you been deployed at all?
Yes.
Where'd you go?
I went to Iraq in 2009.
2009. Where were you there?
I can't say the city. Okay. I can't remember the base's name either, so I can't give you that.
Okay.
But it's just a little too fresh. But I was definitely close to the action, we'll say.
Okay. Can you tell me what you did there?
Yes, I did the same thing that I do here. It's just in a war setting, so you do it a little bit more. It's actually, what's nice about the job is that it's a little bit more lax almost in the desert, which sounds kind of weird. But here you do a lot of, you know, computer-based training to stay up on everything, make sure all your paperwork's in order, and do inspections. Well, when you go to the desert, you make sure everything's good to go at all times, and then you have to do the extreme fixes in case anything happens.
Okay. So while you were over there, what were your living conditions like?
Well, everyone picked on me because I didn't get my stripe in time to get the single dorms. So I had to be in a dorm of a bunch of people, which actually turned out really nice because my bathroom was connected to the dorms, while everyone else had to get dressed in proper PT gear and walk out to the dorms. I mean, to the bathroom. So I got to go in my, like, underwear, and everyone else had to put on the shorts, tuck in their shirt, put their hair up, put the proper shoes on, and reflective belt or whatever you needed, and I could just get up in the middle of the night and walk, which I thought was the best thing ever.
Sounds like it. Other than that, were you living with only Air Force people? And
yes, the base was, it's completely divided, so the Army is in their own section, Air Force is in their own section.
And were you just with women in your dorm?
Yes.
Oh, great. Does anything stick out from all you over there that you're allowed to talk about?
I always think about, like, usually when I see fireworks, I always think about it, because we are kind of stuck in the wire, as they say, on base. Because we're Air Force, and that's where we're needed by the planes, and planes are going off base unless they're flying. So, we would get mortared, like, every day, at least once or twice. And I remember just walking to work, looking over, and like, oh, look, a firework! And, like, in my head, I know it's not a firework, but it exploded so pretty. I was like, oh, pretty, like, we just saw this mortar explode over my head, but, oh, well, let's go to work. And when you think about going to, you know, the desert, you're like, oh, my goodness, I'm going to get shot at, I'm going to get mortared, and then you're over there, and you're like, look, there's a mortar. Like, oh, pretty. But actually, we got to stay at a base that had a pool, because it was not our base originally. So it was Saddam's base, so we got a pool, and we got to hang out there, of course, in military-regulated attire. And actually, my sister got to go to Iraq with me. So we were hanging out on our day off. We coordinated them. And we're sitting there, and all of a sudden we hear this, like, pop, and we hear this, like, wee. We're kind of looking around, and all of a sudden there's this big boom right outside the pool, and they had music, so the music stopped, and I just remember looking down at me and her, and there's this beetle on the ground, and the beetle stopped, and everyone's just kind of looking at each other, and we're like, oh my goodness, should we get out, like, our airman's manual, in our swimsuits, like, trying to figure out how to save this, and there's a couple captains next to us, and we're looking around, and we're like, and the music comes back on, and, oh, okay, we'll just keep hanging out. And then we hear the alarm, like, alarm red. A bomb hit. Be careful. And we're like, okay, I guess that happened.
How that goes. Oh, well. So did you have the firework feeling the first time you got mortared, or was that?
No, I was pretty scary. I remember because I was really, really scared because my sister had gone in 2005 and just heard horror stories of bombs hitting, you never know when anything was coming, because she went to build the base. So when I got there, I was freaking out, thinking, oh my god, I'm going to die. Like, bombs are going to be hitting everywhere. So the first time I heard an alarm red, I was actually Skyping, and you had to go underneath the table, so I'm underneath the table. And other people are still kind of, like, Skyping with their headphones on, but under the table, just trying to be like, oh, it's okay, you know, we'll be there. Just hold on a second. And I'm, oh my goodness, I was like, I'm just going to cry. I was like, oh, we're going to die. And
you made it through.
Yeah, and then it became, I want to go out and see. You should be, like, underneath the desk.
Oh, my goodness. Were there any other incoming things that, other than the mortar and the bomb?
I kind of remember one time we were sitting at my desk, and I remember I got a little lazy and, like, put my feet on the desk because we had just finished everyone taking off. So I was just going to take a break and eat, and all of a sudden the whole building just shakes. And you're kind of like, what just happened? Like, should I go outside? And then there's three of us in there, and we're like, okay, who's going to go outside? Should we go outside, or should we stay in here? Should we call somebody? We all kind of have to decide what to do. And we decide to run outside, and there's, like, smoke coming up, and we're like, okay, cool. We run back inside.
Everything's okay. All right, how long were you over there?
It was 90 days.
90 days. Was that your only deployment?
Yeah.
Okay. And when was that, 2009?
Yep.
Are you still stationed here in Madison?
Mm-hmm.
You haven't been anywhere else?
Nope, our AEF cycle hasn't come up yet.
Yep.
Coming up soon, though.
So, how's it been just being a woman in the military?
It's pretty easy. I mean, not, like, easy, per se, as, like, everyone's doing things for you, but easier than you'd probably expect it to be. You know, you always think of guys as kind of making it more difficult and things. But at first, it's a little difficult because our base was going through changes, like, growing and doing different things. And we only had one stall for our bathroom, and then the number of women started to grow, and then they're like, okay, we need to build a bigger bathroom. So that was pretty difficult. But I say, other than that, those, everyone treats you the same. There's really no difference.
That's good. Did that change at all when you were overseas?
No. No, not at all.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
When you're over there, did you do things like that apart from your job that you just had to do every day, like good luck rituals or anything like that?
I just slept a lot, and then I got time off. I don't know why, but it was just the comfort of every day going to the same job and just knowing, okay, I'm going to work from like 6 in the, at night to 6 in the morning every day, and I know what I'm going to do, and I know how to do it. And then it was almost relaxing after coming from, because like I ran track in college, and then I would coach track, and then I would do all my classes and everything, and finally it was just like, oh, I can just take a break. Like, I can just do this one thing, and I can do it well, and I can go to bed and get some sleep. And it was just almost, like, relaxing. So we'd pretty much sleep all the time. But on our day off, they had, like, a little Italian restaurant. It was ran by Iraqi, so it wasn't how Italian you could get. But we would go there almost every time and get pizza. And then we would go to the USO, and you could get 3 strings a day, and then you'd make the bracelets. I don't know if you've seen the bracelets. A lot of people wear them. And they teach you how to make them, and the USO gives you strings. So every day people go and get 3 strings a day, and then you like rip a button off an old uniform, or if they have a button left over, and then you make these bracelets.
What are the bracelets?
They're just, it's almost like when you were little and you made like the little friendship bracelets out of those weird tiny strings. I don't know, made by like Ben Franklin. But it was just basically 550 cord, so parachute cord in different colors, and they would give them to you, and then they teach you this little way of braiding them, and so they're kind of thick, and then you would put the button on the end, like it's a military button off a uniform, because that's what we had, and then you would hook them together, and that would be the bracelet. And usually, you see a lot of people wearing them. I know they're trying to commercially sell them now, because it's like the cool thing, but you can tell when someone made them, it kind of sticks out.
Did they mean anything?
They kind of are ending up meaning something, because it is something that people do, and all USOs pretty much give out the strings and do it. So now if you see someone with a bracelet, you're kind of like, oh, you made that and you got it from war, or someone you know went to war. So it's starting to mean something.
What's the USO?
It's just an organization that they have them at like every airport and in a lot of cities and stuff, just to help out servicemen and women. And you can, it's not like there's civilians over there at the USO. It's people who volunteer, military people on their day off can go volunteer and work there. And they are the ones who help you. You can like videotape books to your children, and they give you Wi-Fi outlets so you can rent movies and books. It's just kind of like a way to connect with home.
Do you know what it stands for?
I think it's the United Service Organization. I'm pretty sure.
So if you got to rent a movie, where would you go to watch it?
Well, most people, that's what's nice about modern day war, you can bring your computer. So like everyone would bring a laptop with them. But there's also, like the USO had TVs. And there's like some places that you could go that would have day rooms, like there was one building where you could go and you sign your name down and you get to use a computer for a certain amount of minutes. And they would also have TVs in there too, so you could watch stuff like that.
That's cool. So you said you slept in a dorm. What was that like?
It's a trailer. That's what it is. What we call them dorms, because it's just a really long, skinny trailer. And then they would have rooms off the hallway. And then in there, there'd be a bunch of bunk beds. So then we just picked a bunk bed.
Was it nicer?
Yeah, it was, I mean, it's a trailer. There wasn't, like, holes in it or anything like that. I wouldn't trust it to be perfect, but we pretty much made it look like a dorm room, because you get a locker and you get your thing, and since we slept during the daytime, we'd have blankets hung up all over our bed, so no one could see you anyway. It was like your own little space.
That's pretty cool. What about, like, your mess hall?
That was just a giant, another trailer-looking building. It wasn't a trailer, but they all kind of had the same siding on them. So it was just a giant building, and most of it was run by Iraqis. It was just our way to help them start integrating on base and things like that. So that was kind of the only interaction you'd have with Iraqis would be when you go there and, like, order a sandwich and talk to them.
That's the only interaction. I read the other ways that they were bringing the Iraqis into the effort.
Well, they did other jobs around base. I really didn't have any involvement with that besides seeing them at the cafeteria. And they would pay them to come on base and work for us and things like that, so...
Man, you must have had some downtime or some, like, got up to some kind of mischief or fun.
Not really. Well, we'd pull some pranks on people, but it was mainly because there was rules against not having, like, sexual items. So we'd always pull pranks. Like, one time we filled a glove with lotion so that when people put their hand in it, it was filled with lotion just because you get bored every now and then. But, or, like, maybe put, like, we drew a lot of pictures and you stick it in, like, pilots' lockers and they'd open their locker and, like, what is this? And cause just problems. But otherwise, we were pretty good. Our way out of the building was to drive and get chow. We'd get chow for everybody. So that was our way to get out and drive around and go get food. And we put our Now CD in the truck and, like, Now 29 or whatever is all we listen to because there's no radio stations. So we memorized, like, Holiday in the song. That's about it.
Do you have people send you the next Now album?
No, we bought that at the BX. That's all we could do. So, and we would, like, drive around to the other side of the base and go to the other BX because, yeah, that was cool.
But still the Air Force side?
It was, like, there were different sections of Army. So there was one Army section closer to us. I'm not sure what they did. And then there was another Army section on the other side of the base. And they had another BX. So driving around to the other side of the base is like driving to the other side of the country. It was like a different experience. So you would go over there sometimes to get away from it.
Go from Air Force to Army Life.
Yeah.
Were there any people who were just like, I don't know, just like funny? Like they just stood out, were like goofing off all the time or anything?
No, we're pretty calm. I say night shift is always a little bit goofier because it's all night, so it's all dark outside. So you just get a little goofy just being up only at nighttime. And usually the highest ranking people are sleeping at nighttime because they go out during the day like usual or whatever, so.
There's not much supervision?
No. Well, I mean, obviously I shouldn't say like only high ranking people because there's a lot of high ranking people all over all the time, but it's just, yeah, I don't know, nighttime is just different.
Oh my goodness. So when you're here, how often are you doing Air Force stuff?
We do it 1 weekend a month and then 2 to 3 weeks a year.
And you're just going to school?
Yeah, and working.
That's right. Where do you work again?
I work at the Capitol.
That's right. And you're going to UW for UW-Madison for your graduate?
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me anything more about being overseas? It's such a different experience.
Yeah. I don't have too much I can say about other people besides myself. So it was, I know, I kind of, like I said before, I liked it. It was kind of nice just focusing on one thing. And, I mean, I would always hide cereal. I remember because we had day shift and night shift. And then no matter how much you like the day shift, like, it becomes a war between night shift and day shift. And I would, like, hide my cereals. I remember cereal, for some reason, was this, like, protected food I had. And I would, like, hide it all over the place so they couldn't find it and eat it because I couldn't get Fruit Loops that much, and that's what I wanted. Like, we'd hide it all over the place. And, like, I put signs up on my bananas, like, don't touch my bananas because it was hard to get good fruit that you like. Like, I like watermelon and banana, and obviously you can't get very much watermelon and banana in the desert, so I would put signs on it. And you just know, like, people mess around with it, and then I have to throw it away. You know, I get so upset.
Was there a lot of cereal stealing going on?
Yes, there was. I wasn't happy with it.
What were the hot commodities?
Fruit Loops, definitely Fruit Loops. They ran out fast, so you had to keep them.
Nothing healthy, just
Fruit Loops. No, Fruit Loops. And French toast. Like, like one of my friends, Steph, that I met in the desert, she and I would go get French toast at 3 a.m. For some reason, that's, like, all I would eat. I needed French toast at 3 a.m., and it was amazing. And, like, my supervisor would even know. I'm like, oh, my God. He's like, yeah, I know. You need French toast. I'm like, I need it. He's like, I do, too. And, like, we still talk about it. I'm like, oh, you know what I could go for? I could go for some French toast from the desert. Like, that's what I want. I don't know why, but the Air Force is away with French toast. And I could go for basic French toast. And I could go for desert French toast.
How's it different?
I have no idea, but it's my favorite French toast in the world. And I want it. Same with biscuits and gravy at basic. I can go for biscuits and gravy.
But just at basic.
Just at basic. And I mean, I had really good food. It could be because I was probably starving. Like, well, you're not starving, but you think you're starving. Because you only get 3 meals a day, and you can't eat anything else otherwise. So you're like, oh my gosh, I need food. And you learn to eat in like 5 seconds flat. And that's where the weight gain comes from for people like me. I gained, I think, 15 pounds in basic. And that was just fat. That was just fat.
What was the weather like when you were over there?
It was pretty, it was nice, actually. It was like 90s to 100, but it was a dry heat, which I really like. So when I went to basic in Texas in the summertime, so I was used to the dry heat. I like it. We stopped in Qatar, which is like the face of the sun, along with Kuwait. That is a hot, hot heat. It doesn't matter what temperature it is. But in Iraq, it's comfy. And then they started to rain, and the rainstorms were pretty crazy because it's so dry that it'll just flood everything, and it's just muddy and disgusting, and the thunderstorms are scary in the desert.
Were your buildings air-conditioned, or were you?
Yes, mm-hmm. They were air-conditioned.
That's good.
Even our tents were air-conditioned. Which is nice.
Mm-hmm. That's good. What were you in Kuwait for?
We actually got misdirected by accident. And so we ended up in Kuwait for a couple days before we got our next flight to Qatar.
All right.
Yeah.
What did you do while you were there?
A lot of waiting. Like, we got bedding and we went to our tent, and they're like, oh, your plane's ready. And then our plane wasn't actually ready. It had to get fixed for a second. So then we just sat and sat and sat. And then went to, like, McDonald's.
They have those over there?
Yep. And they have Cinnabons and Pizza Huts. And
is that just in Kuwait or is that in Iraq too?
That's in Iraq too, yeah. They have Cinnabons and Pizza Huts and Subways.
Wow. Did you get to go to those at all or were you stuck on base?
Those are on base.
Oh, they're on base.
Yeah, okay. Those are only on base.
All right. I don't think they really go for a sub over there. Have you done anything with, like, reunions or anything since being back?
Well, it was basically me, my sister, and Steph, who hung out all the time. And I see my sister, obviously, I see my sister. And Steph has kind of gone around, and she actually ended up getting out of the military, but because she had a baby. But I see her a lot anyway, too, so.
Is she one of your good friends in the military?
Yeah.
Did you meet at boot camp? Or?
No, I met her overseas, and I met my other friend Ashley in boot camp. Which is actually, well, tech school. And then she got stationed in Germany, which was nice. So I went and visited her in Germany and had a place to stay.
Did you learn German while you were there?
No. It was just my spring break. So I went, because I actually had a roommate in college, too, who was from Germany. So it was a nice way to just go visit both of them.
Awesome.
See the American version of Germany and the German version of it.
Did you go sightseeing at all while you were over there?
Yeah, we did a lot. Actually, the main focus they wanted me to do when I saw my German friends in Germany was go to the commissary, because they used to have a military base over there, but now they only have a commissary, and you need a military ID to get in, and they wanted American food. So I took them grocery shopping, so they could get Mountain Dew, because they don't have Mountain Dew, and they could get Chips Ahoy cookies, and I showed them, like, toaster strudels, which I thought was hilarious, and cakes that you only add water to, and they're like, this is ridiculous. But we actually visited, when I was with my military friend, we went to Ramstein, and we visited a hospital there, where a lot of military vets go after they get injured, and we walked around and talked to some of them.
How was that?
It was sad, but I think it was more sad because I was younger, and I was just a sophomore and didn't really experience anything, so it was more sad to see that, I think, than actually just going over there and kind of, it's a different mindset when you go over there, but I think it has to be. So it was sad seeing it just kind of as a civilian, but, like, in the military, just personally, I know I kind of, like, you kind of tune out your emotions because, I mean, if you're sad every time, like, a mortar hits or scared, you're not going to get anything done, so.
Were these, what branches were these veterans from? All of them, or?
A lot of them, I think, were Marines and Army, because that was, I think, like, 2007, so it was a pretty bad time.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of Army and Marines.
Did you talk to them at all?
Yeah, actually, my friend's now husband, he was a sniper, and one of his friends was in there. So we went and hung out with him for a while, but he was a little drugged up, so we couldn't quite understand what we were saying, but...
That's like, it was probably for the better.
Yeah.
He's healing up. So, You said being a woman didn't really have any difference, you didn't think?
No, not at all. It really doesn't. I mean, occasionally you'll meet, like, I had one woman teacher who, I don't know if maybe, like, she had a weird experience or something, but felt like women needed to stand up a little bit stronger, or, you know, like, no one could help them do anything, but I think that's kind of, you meet those women everywhere, like, police officers, you know, people joke about things like that. But really, I mean, if you step back, you don't get treated any differently. I think what's different now is that you look at it as, you know, people will say, oh, my grandpa served, or my uncle served, or things like that. But now it's starting to be like, well, my mom served, and my aunt served. And a lot of people aren't putting those two together. They still think of history of the military as men. So I think, I mean, women are trying, and they're doing more things. Like, we had a women's group and stuff where we got together and talked about issues in the military, you know, that maybe our base needs to fix or work on, and things like that. So they're starting to be kind of more aware, and there's more outreach for that type of thing now, because a lot of women have babies and they can get pregnant, and as a man can just usually leave and the woman takes care of the kid, it's like, well, what does a woman do when they leave their kid? So there's more issues, I think, that people don't really think about, but they're taking care of it, I think, pretty well. So, and I even heard a rumor that they might be making body gear to match women better. So
cool. Is that just Air Force, or is that going to be service-wide?
I think I read it in a magazine somewhere, that they were going to try to make body gear that fit women, because obviously when you have a chest, if you have a bigger chest especially, it kind of hangs off of you, and then it's hard to shoot a weapon and things like that. So I know they're trying to, obviously, money.
That's good.
I don't know if the Air Force is different or anything like that, but no, I really have any problems.
So they just, in the Air Force, they just are really integrated, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's, especially when you come in now, I mean, it's just such a young group of people, because even if you're, what's the age, like 35, 37, I don't know the cutoff, I mean, even they are now into this day and age where, you know, women are stronger, so to speak, and have different careers and things like that. So usually when you tell a guy you're in the military, they get, like, scared of you, which is weird, but that's okay, too. You can be scared if you want, or, you know, you get the looks like, oh, you're in the military? Yes, I can have long hair and be in the military, but no, usually everyone's, yeah, they're pretty okay with it, because I think they almost judge you a little bit by being in the military. They're like, oh, she can handle it, type of a thing, you know, so there's no need to do anything like that.
Is that the kind of reaction when you're, like, out on the weekend and... like, some guy's like, what do you do? Like,
yeah.
I'm in the military.
Yeah. I usually don't tend to tell people. It's just kind of, you know, like I said before, the day and age, you don't really, I don't know, I'm not one of those people who likes to tell everybody, because it's just like, who I trust, who I not trust, especially with everything that's going on in the world. So, I mean, I'm proud of it, but it's also like my little secret. I just keep it to myself sometimes. But yeah, usually people are like, oh, like, they look at you different, like, oh, yeah. Oh, okay, well, you're not like this typical woman I can just, like, hit on or something.
That's kind of a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of a good thing.
So, you said you're proud of your military service, but it's your kind of secret?
Well, it's just, you know, with everything that's been going on in the years, and then, like, 9/11 and everything like that, like, it's, you know, it's good to be proud to be an American and everything, you know, but... I don't recommend, obviously, like, don't go to Europe and bring your military ID and show everybody. That might not be the best idea. That's kind of what I think. But, I mean, like, I'll use my military backpack a lot to travel because it's just easy and it's huge and things like that. But, I don't know. It's just, maybe it's just me over a lot of people. I like to just kind of, it's like, people don't need to know what I do all the time. They don't need to be involved and things like that. So, I just keep it to myself and tell people that I feel like, not like a need-to-know basis, because I don't trust everybody, but...
So then what made you decide to join in the first place, if not for the, look at me, I'm in the military?
Well, I just, like we were talking about before, I couldn't really see not doing it. It would be really weird to not do it. And, like, when it came to, I re-upped in May, and we were talking about that, and I know my boyfriend's a little, you know, he approves of it, but sometimes I think he gets scared. Like, what if we do get married and we have kids and then you leave? And I think that scares him. Like, what would happen to me? And then we'd have to take care of the kids type of a thing. But, it was just my life. That's what was going to happen. And it wasn't because my dad said anything like that. It was just kind of something, like, I knew I was going to do. I was just going to do it. And yeah, I mean, I can't listen to, like, what's the song, I'm Proud to Be American, without crying. Which I hate, because they always play it while you're in uniform, and you're like, come on, like, the one time I shouldn't be crying, but, I know, I just, it's just something I want to do. I can't really describe it very well. And, like, my dad even sat me down, and he's like, I don't want you to think you have to do this, like, almost trying to talk me out of it. I'm like, no, I'm doing it. I don't understand. Like, this is what I'm supposed to do.
So, with your boyfriend's concerns, would your deployments always be 90 days, or would they be longer?
I think it just depends. I know the Air Force, they usually don't last that long, but I also know some people who've gone for, like, 6 months and things like that. It just depends. But with the Air National Guard, it's really nice because it's a voluntary force, and you can volunteer. I mean, obviously, I will volunteer because I didn't sign the line just to sit around, but I don't know. Some people might. So... it just all depends, really, on the situation and everything that goes on. Now politics, everything that goes on in politics can decide it. Who knows?
Are you planning to stay in for, like, the 20 years, or...?
Yeah. Might as well. I'm in this long.
Yeah. How long have you been in?
6.5 years.
6.5 years. Oh. And was this your first re-up?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow, that's pretty cool. Are you gonna, do you think you'll ever do the officer program?
Yeah, I've been looking for an officer job. They're just hard. They're far and few between lately, and I know, like, you race for a job, I feel like everybody in the world's racing for that job with you, so you have to really get up there and compete.
Do you have to go to, like, officer school before you can apply for those?
You can, you usually take a test, an officer test, okay. And then you apply, and usually the score on your test helps you get a job or whatnot. But yeah, then afterwards you get the job, then you have to go to OTS, an officer training school.
And do you have to go to tech school again?
If you change jobs, yeah.
Would you?
Yeah.
What do you want to do?
Well, I would like to be a historian, but those are more like active duty jobs now, so I don't really want to do an active duty job and get kind of, not say like stuck in it, but I really like the civilian world too. So probably, I was looking at history, but probably not, maybe like a public affairs job.
What would that entail?
Just kind of like the... who to talk to, you know, like, if we're doing something like this, like, you call your public affairs person, and they talk to you about, you know, like, what you can and cannot say, and what to tell the media, or they handle the media, things like that.
So, I don't know if you can answer this, but how long until you can talk about, like, where you were?
I don't know. I don't know. Like, I'm sure, you know, Korean vets, Desert Storm vets can probably talk about where they are, but it's just, I guess, maybe whenever this ends.
Okay. How, like, has your perception of it changed, like, of the whole war in general since you've been there?
I don't know. I really didn't go too much into the war. I mean, I was, like, a freshman in high school when 9/11 happened, and I didn't even know what the Twin Towers were, so I was like, oh, that's interesting. Like, why did that happen? That's pretty bad. But, I don't know. I've always kind of, I guess, avoided it for some reason. I don't know why I personally avoided it. I know a lot of people are, you know, hardcore into it because they're in the military and they want to know, like, every little political decision, but I signed up to follow our governor and then in active duty follow our president, so I'm going to do it no matter what because I'm going to get told to do it, so I haven't really decided to get too involved in it.
What about when you're, do you think that'll change when you're out? I think yes.
Of the view of the war or the view of the military?
Both.
Probably not. I don't think so, because, I mean, if anything, it would be now that it would change, I assume, of me, knowing me. I think, if anything, my opinion would change now, especially with my job and everything that I'm researching and learning and things like that, that it would change now. So, I mean, I'm curious to see how it ends, and that might change how I think about it, but, I don't think that'll really change. I try to keep... like, my military life separate from my political views.
That might be a safe decision.
Yeah.
That's pretty much my sub-question. But, anything you want to talk about? Experiences you'd like to share?
I think I pretty much talked about everything. I was thinking about the treating different in the military. It wasn't in the military. It's usually outside of the military. Like, yeah. I had my Air Force sweatshirt on one day. And I was probably, like, 19, and we went to Culver's, and this one's like, oh, is that your boyfriend's sweatshirt? And I was just like, no, I'm not going to talk to you, though. I don't be, like, talking about it. Like, no, that's my opinion. But sometimes you get, like, the little kids who come up to you, And then she's like, maybe I want to cry. And I'm like, thank you. Or even, like, sometimes I'll go to the bookstore or something after I'm done with drill because I need to pick something up. And, like, the one time I went, and there's this little girl just pulling on her dad's arm. She's like, look. Like, not, we're trying to whisper, so I couldn't hear. She's like, look over there. Like, and she's like, what? I'm just an army person. Like, you're an army person. You're not a Marine, a Navy, you're an army person. And she's like, look at the army person. And she kind of walked away staring, like, oh, my gosh, what is that? They get, the little kids are pretty funny.
That inspired her to join when she's older.
Well, my friend has a little 6-year-old son, and actually, like, the BXL's little military uniforms for kids, so I bought him one for Halloween, and he's so excited. He's like, I can't wait to show her what I look like in it, and it's so cute. And I gave him one of those little bracelets. I have hundreds, because I went every day. So he got a little bracelet, and he's all excited.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, so the kids are really cute. I like the kids.
Oh, my goodness. Anything, like, what kind of pranks did you pull? Like, you said something about, like, you're not allowed to have sexual things over there. Like, did that get broken in the pranks at all?
No, not really. It was just more, like, picking on about it. Like, you know, just picking on people. Like, oh, I think, like, one time we, like, drew a pair of boobs and stuck it in somebody's locker. Like, because we had all, like, men pilots at the time. So we can stick it in their lockers. Like, just as jokes, and so they open up. And usually it was the younger, like, lieutenants that we'd stick it in there and probably prank something.
You guys got away with doing that to officers?
It's, like, in my job, you're around the officers every site. Like, I don't see enlisted people. I usually just see officers. So, I mean, obviously there's still that difference where you're enlisted, and I, you know, you're like, oh, hey, sir, what's up? So you still, like, say, sir, but you know, and you're still, your courtesies and all those type of things. But you obviously, I mean, you're still people. So you have, like, a different kind of, like, friendship, but you keep everything still the same.
Does that conduct change while you're overseas at all?
No, it stays the same, really. I mean, the only difference is you don't really salute very much.
Why?
It's a war zone.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Give away who the officers are.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm supposed to do that.
That's pretty common. Oh, my goodness. I'm just imagining a young pilot, like, getting ready for his day.
Yeah, you know, they're all excited, and you've been in for, like, 5 years, so you're like, oh, okay, buddy. Like, oh, man. And reflective belts, still zero was fun, too.
What?
Reflective belts, you have to wear reflective belts.
Why?
You're pretty much like a giant reflector when you're in the military. Safety first. So our PT gear has reflectives on it, plus you have to wear belts. And, like, the Army wears it kind of like a pageant sash, and the Air Force wears it around your waist. So we got a bunch of belts one day, and we're, like, wrapping them around our arms and stuff. And I wrote, like, aircrew flight equipment monitor, and my friend was writing, like, computer monitor. And we're, like, wearing them around, like, karate gear type stuff. Yeah. Reflective belts are kind of a running joke with me. I mean, I get the use, and I'll wear them, but they are pretty funny. So we walk around with, like, this giant reflector belt on you when you're dressed up in black vests and helmets, and you have a reflector belt around you. It's, like, and camo. That has a reflective belt.
Not very camo.
I get it, but yeah, it might not be working all that well. Okay.
So since you've been home, like, are there things that bother you, like things that trigger?
The ending of the tape, like your ears pop up. You're like, what's that whizzing noise? Because there's certain things that still sound like them, like mortars. It's like that noise, and I remember I was in work the other day, and there's protesters around the Capitol, and they're making these weird noises, and I was like, what is that? What's that noise? Like, does anybody else hear that? Sounds like, what's that noise? And they all kind of look at you like, whatever. Because I think everyone's so, I'm not going to say comfortable with war, but they're used to it. So, like, even if you're a veteran, a lot of people are veterans, and because they don't experience it, maybe their families aren't military and stuff, they don't. Like, they thank you, but they don't quite understand it. So, like, when you hear things like that, they're like, oh, whatever. You're like, yeah, we get it. You're a veteran. But you know what I mean? It's like, they don't quite comprehend why you pop up like that. Like, I remember my sister, we go up north, and they had a siren, because there was mines up north, so the siren would go off at, like, noon. And she flung out of her chair one day sleeping. She's a dead sleep and hit the ground. And she's like, sounds like an alarm red. And I'm like, yeah, it's okay. I get back up. It's okay.
What about stuff like fireworks? Do fireworks bother you at all?
I kind of thought they would. I was excited to see, like, my first fire. Oh, it's gonna happen. But maybe I prepared myself too well for that. But, no, they don't really bother me. Like, I mean, I'm sure they probably bother some more people who heard more than I did, and I felt almost a little safer, because, you know, we have alarms that go off before they hit and things like that, so I was worried, but that was more, like, in the back of your mind. You're not, you know, something happens, what are you gonna do? Like, run away, you know? So, just kind of deal with it. So fireworks don't really bother me. Some fireworks, like, remind me of stuff I've seen, but it doesn't, like, make me upset or anything like that. It's just kind of like, oh, that's like, oh, deja vu. Do you have anything else you want to talk about?
No, nothing I can think of. No? I don't really have any more questions for you.
Okay.
So you want to call it a day?
Sure.
All right.
And we...